Borg Thumb, guys.
Borg Thumb and Mike.
Borg Thumb, Paul.
Borg Thumb.
Borag Thung, Keith.
Borag Thung, Mike.
Right, here we go. Right. We okay, Nick? Yeah, ready to record? Super. Excellent. Right. Right. Ready? Great. 3, 2, 1. Splundig Verthrig.
Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borag Thung, Earthlitz, and welcome to the 2000 AD Thrillcast. I am Molchar, and I can only apologise. My conversational Beetlejuicean was off kilter last week, and I managed to greet you to the Thrillcast with a hearty goodbye, which, isn't quite the right way around to do it. So, Borag Thung, for those of you who don't know all about Tharg the Mighty's native tongue, feel free to go on Wikipedia, where you can find an entire entry that will give you some pointers should you ever run into a green-skinned alien with a phone dial on his forehead. But without further ado, let's crack on with another Thrillcast. And this week we have a particular favourite of mine, which is Judge Anderson Shambhala, which is the next edition of the Judge Dredd, the Mega Collection from 2000 AD and Hachette Partworks. Now, Judge Anderson, for those of you who've not read an awful lot of Judge Dredd, is so much more than just the female equivalent of Judge Dredd. She's a wonderful character in her own right. First appeared in the first Judge Death story, and she's co-created by John Wagner, Alan Grant, and Brian Bolland. She was a bit of a bit part at the time, but was instrumental in defeating Judge Death on his first appearance. She was later brought back and really has gone on to become one of the cornerstones of 2000 AD. In a minute, we're going to be talking to Alan Grant, who's the writer of Shambhala, but it's really worth picking up a copy if you can get hold of it, not just in the Judge Dredd Mega Collection, but it's also available in a fantastic 2000 AD collection, which is Judge Anderson the Sci-Files. Now, there's several volumes of that, but Shambhala is in volume number 2, but I do recommend that you pick up the entire series because it's got some absolutely groundbreaking comics in there. And Shambhala really is the jewel in the crown, an incredible story full of comment on spirituality, on man's place in the world, on the judge system and Anderson as a person, on love, on hate, on prejudice. It's one of those stories that takes your breath away when you read it, and it's had a profound effect on many of our readers. So both as somebody who works at 2000 AD but also on a personal recommendation, I do suggest that you pick it up for some of the best comics that you can possibly get hold of. Now, Judge Dredd, the Mega Collection, is available through all newsagents in the UK and Ireland, but all of the stories that we're going to be talking about today are also available through the Judge Anderson Sci-Files series. So we're not going to have a long preamble on this Thrillcast. We're just going to get straight into it. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Mr. Alan Grant, who's joining us on the phone all the way from Scotland. Welcome to the 2000 AD Thrillcast, Alan.
No, thank you.
So let's just jump straight in and talk a little bit about Shambhala. What are your memories of the period when you wrote Shambhala? Because it was the you'd been on Anderson solo for a little while, hadn't you?
Yeah. I always try to pick subjects for Judge Anderson stories which have an interest for me. And I had, at that time, recently read about the underground race known as the Deeros, which I hadn't previously heard of before. But evidently, about 100 years earlier, there were a couple of novels released which featured the Deeros. I think they were by a writer called Edward Bulmer Lytton, I think that was his name.
Mm.
And I didn't know if there was any factual evidence behind what he was claiming in his novel. They may well just have been novels. But I came across a very interesting book whose title I can no longer remember. But it was about tunnels underneath the surface of the Earth.
Mm.
And this book claimed that the entrance to massive tunnels have been found in various places, South America, in Asia in some places. And it seemed to me a good idea for a story. It was very different from anything that Anderson had done before. In fact, different indeed from anything Judge Dredd or anything in the Judge world had touched on before. But I thought it was perfect material for an Anderson story.
And I mean that's a very interesting point, because Anderson had obviously dealt with the supernatural before, but this is the first kind of foray into, I suppose, what you could term actual Fortean ideas and storylines.
Yeah. I'd used the Department of I can't remember what I called it, Department of Fortean Effects.
Yeah, I think that was it. Yeah,
I'd used them previously. Seemed to make sense to open the whole subject up. And, well, for me anyway, Arthur Ranson's artwork on the entire series was just totally superlative. He captured my ideas for the story perfectly. And I was so happy with the work he did on it. And Shambhala is one of my favourite things of all the thousands of scripts I've written over the last 35 years. Shambhala is definitely in the top five.
It's certainly a personal favourite of mine, and like you said, for Arthur Ranson's just incredible artwork, because you'd worked together on Triad, but that was in black and white, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And this was the first Anderson story in full colour. And I mean, what was your reaction when you first saw it?
I was blown away. I thought it was absolutely beautiful. Mm. I mean, I'm Arthur's number one fan in the whole universe anyway. I think he was the perfect artist for Anderson.
Mm.
And it pains me to think that he's no longer capable of drawing, although I suppose illness and old age come to all of us in the end.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, it was quite sad, particularly after having worked with you on the Anderson story Half-Life for the Judge Dredd magazine. That kind of went on for such a great span of time for him to then have to hang up
his brushes and his pencils.
It
was very sad. I know a little myself about how being ill can affect your ability to do your job.
Mm.
Because about 5 or 6 years ago, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, which has caused me no end of problems when it comes to writing scripts. But I know, at least to a small extent, how Arthur must have felt. I'm just glad that Shambhala is among the legacy that he's left to all of us.
Mm. It really managed to capture... And there's something about his style that manages to capture both the mundanity of the real world. So, you know, walking down the street, you can see the crumbling concrete, you can see some graffiti, but at the same time, these incredible kind of science fiction landscapes, and not just science fiction, but also the kind of phantasmagorical landscapes that he drew in Shambhala.
He's got a great imagination, I would work with the guy forever.
Mm.
Arthur and I still keep in touch.
Oh, right, lovely.
With each other.
Mm.
We email each other Not constantly, but quite frequently.
Because you worked together for such a long time.
Yeah, and when a writer finds an artist like Arthur, who is able to both grasp the theme of the story, but still to add his own creativity to that, it's something that you do not want to ever lose.
Mm.
I've worked on many stories, I'm not going to go into details, obviously, but where I wasn't a fan of the artist's work, and perhaps the artist wasn't a fan of my work, and things just didn't gel. But with Arthur, everything seemed to gel.
It's a real mark of the kind of lasting connection between the two of you that it just seemed to go from strength to strength, because in this volume we've also got Satan, which for my money is one of the most glorious short stories I think 2000 AD's ever done, particularly and spoilers for the listeners out there who haven't read this yet, but particularly when you have Satan opening up the Book of Life, and you have this incredible collage of all these terrible things, and then Satan towards the end of the story sitting amongst that vast background of skulls and dead bodies. You know, it really knocks your socks off.
Yeah, and claiming that he didn't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought Arthur's work on that was perfect as well.
Yeah,
Satan is another favourite story of mine. Again, it's not the usual sort of thing that that is handled in the Judge Dredd world, apart perhaps from the Dark Judges. But I think Satan would have been a good adversary for the Dark Judges as well.
We've touched on the fact that Anderson is a strip that has come to explore ideas and themes that you don't normally get in Judge Dredd's world, and there's a significant focus on spirituality and belief and faith and themes like that. When we've talked before, you've mentioned this rather interesting story about when you were exploring kind of modes of Eastern thought and spirituality.
It was a subject I was very interested in, and I wanted to write stories utilizing it. But when you're normally writing superhero material, or indeed Judge Dredd material, you don't often get a chance to handle it. So Judge Anderson was the perfect vehicle for it. I mean, not only is she a woman, and women are generally considered to be more sensitive to the supernatural than men, but there were ideas about religion in there. I'm not religious myself, I have to say, but I'm very interested in religion, and I read a lot about religion. And I was able to use some of these ideas in Satan. And for me, any script where I can use biblical quotations to mark off the panels is a bonus.
Tell us a little bit about Lobsam Rampa.
Yeah, well, I won't say where I first came into contact with Lobsang Rampa's work, but I read the first book of his I read when I was about 20 or 21 years old. And although it seemed in a sense quite nonsensical, that, you know, I was like, well, how can anybody think this? I thought, well, there's a lot to it. He claimed that mankind had been seeded or put on the earth as the steward of the planet, not, as it says in the Bible, to have domination over the planet, but to be the species which was to look after everything else. And if that's true, you know, you just need to look around the world today and think, well, we failed pretty abysmally at what we were supposed to be doing. But a few years later, Lobsang Rampa was exposed being, I believe, a plumber from someplace like Sheffield or Leeds. And, you know, it destroyed an awful lot of his of his viability. And I think that he wrote about 15 or 20 books altogether. And I have to say that they were quite boringly written, but the ideas that they expressed were very, very interesting. And I thought, well, okay, so he's a plumber from Sheffield, you know. It's like I'm just a kid from Scotland. That doesn't stop us talking about things which are greater than the both of us. And I continue to lend credence to Lobsang. I may be the only person in the world who does that now, because he was pretty thoroughly debunked when they discovered. But there's so much truth in what he was saying in his books that I would recommend them to anybody to read, you know, as long as you can read them with an open mind. They still hold lessons for all of us today.
Well, it's something I wanted to touch on with stories such as Satan and the Jesus Syndrome, and to a certain extent Shambhala. There's a handling of, I mean, I know you said, you know, you're not religious yourself, but there's a handling of religious ideas and the implications of religion, which is very fair and even-handed, because Judge Dredd's always had quite a heavy satirical bent when it comes to religion. You know, you get the Church of Grud, which is basically just filled with absolute loonies. Whereas Anderson seems to, like I said, has been a lot more sort of fair and even-handed in its explorations of those themes. How much was that an influence of your own religious upbringing?
Well, I had a very religious upbringing in that my parents sent me to Sunday school and Bible class every week for something from when I was 3 years old until at 16 I was. It was decided that I was old enough to decide whether I was going to continue or not, and I didn't continue. But I've always found religion to be extremely interesting, particularly as what mankind tends to do with religious messages is 180 degrees opposed to what those messages were in the first place. Buddha said that the basis of everything is love, but then when you look at the Buddhists in Burma and Thailand, they're forming gangs and going around and setting fire to Muslim villages and killing Muslim villagers, which is the total antithesis of everything that Buddha taught. And it's the same with Jesus, you know. Jesus taught love. And yet when you think about the, well, for instance, I know it was a long time ago, but the Crusades, when Christian warriors entered Jerusalem to take it back again. I mean, eyewitness accounts at the time say the streets of Jerusalem ran knee-deep in Muslim blood. And, you know, I'm thinking, well, how can this possibly be? Jesus told us to love each other, not to kill the children and women and anybody that they could find that was Muslim, probably Muslim dogs as well. It's just so different from what the original message was. And I have a lot of respect for religions. And although in other stories I laugh at them quite openly or make fun of them quite openly, I'm very, very aware of the serious reality behind all of the religions that I've investigated. Except perhaps for Mormonism. That's one that I find it hard to climb on board.
But Anderson, as you've mentioned, it seems the perfect character to explore these themes and ideas. But there's always that kind of slight world weariness about her as a character, particularly after Shambhala, where you know she has fallen in love for the first time and had that love snatched away from her, and it seems that she is kind of the world weary pilgrim on the road trying to find answers,
trying to find peace, trying yes. to find peace of mind.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, it's a bit like me. Although I don't go out shooting people or catching bad guys, I do have the same concerns and the same weariness of the way that mankind seems to get it wrong every time, you know? I'd like to do a story about why that happened, but I haven't. I mean, it's been marked down in my notebook of ideas for quite a while, but I haven't yet found the perfect vehicle through which to tell the story. So that's still one for the future.
I mean, coming back to more mundane earthly matters, you'd originally written Judge Anderson with John Wagner. Was it originally an editorial decision to spin Anderson off into her own series, or did it come from you and John?
I honestly couldn't tell you. I don't know if it's just my memory or if we weren't told at the time.
Mm.
But no, I really can't remember if it was our decision or if it was the 2008 editor's decision. I can't even remember who was editor at the time, because I've worked under so many 2008 editors now.
But you wrote three Anderson stories together before you went on to Anderson as the solo writer. Can you remember what prompted that move?
No. That's just one of the things about being a writer, you know.
But yeah.
Especially if you've written thousands of scripts, you can't remember where the idea for particular things came from. In fact, when John Wagner and I were still working together, there were times we would sit down and say, "Right, here's an idea for instance, a Dredd story," and we'd write four or five pages, and then one of us would say to the other one, "Do you not think there's something familiar about this?" And another one would say, "Yeah, well, let's have a look back through the progs and see if we've mentioned it before, you know." And we find that the four or five pages we had written were almost identical to four or five pages we had written from another story a couple of years beforehand. In the end, we got John's then wife to draw up a catalogue of all the stories
right.
that we had written together, and to tell us in writing what we had actually covered in each story, so that we wouldn't go repeating ourselves again and wasting time, actually.
Because that was an extraordinarily fruitful friendship and working relationship that you and John had for many years, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we haven't done any work together recently, but at that time, I think we were both heading towards the peak of our particular writing powers, and I think that a lot of the stories that we did together came together really, really well, and they set a standard for Dredd's world. Which was worth following, you know. And I'm not just talking about the Judge Dredd stories. I mean, you probably know that John and I were writing something like 12 or 15 stories a week for various IPC comics. Mm. And we worked for Battle, and we worked for almost all the boys' comics.
Yeah.
That IPC were doing. And this may have had some bearing on it. In those days, there were no royalties. We didn't get paid anything if our stuff was republished anywhere, which was a kind of sore point with John and I, but we just had to get on with it, and we decided that volume was the only way that we could combat that, which is why we ended up writing so many stories. Eagle was the comic I was trying to remember. Yeah. And couldn't, but I mean, we wrote loads of stories for Eagle as well, both when it was a photo strip comic and then when it went down to artwork after that. And John Sanders, who was the managing director of the youth division of IPC, got in touch with us and said he didn't mind us writing all these stories, but he didn't want the readers to know that it was the same two guys who were writing all their comics. So we started writing under various pseudonyms, and I think at one point we were writing under something like 12 or 15 different pseudonyms.
Good God.
It was quite remarkable, really. But like I said, we weren't getting paid royalties, so we decided that the only way that we could combat this was to produce a vast volume of work. And as John and I are pretty much on the same wavelength, when it comes to a lot of things, we have a very similar sense of humour. We have a similar sense of what makes a story good or makes a story boring. John was obviously more experienced than I was in writing for comics, although I had more experience in writing for the text magazines. Before I started writing comics, I had quite a successful career as a writer of female romantic fiction for various publications, which at the time I quite enjoyed doing, you know. I quite enjoyed it, and the experience has stood me in good stead since, because all the stories obviously were very emotional, you know. Stories like My Boyfriend Was a Hell's Angel, or I Threw My Baby Off the London Train, or any of the dozens of other stories that I wrote for magazines like Loving and Love Affair and True Confessions. At the time that I was doing this, I thought that my chance to work in comics had come and gone. I actually went to IPC to see if I could get a job working in comics, but when I went, the comic division was actually on strike, so it shows you how long ago that was. Yes. You know? People don't have strikes anymore. So when they were on strike, I just took the first job that IPC offered me, which happened to be with a part work, one of these, well, a bit like the Hachette Judge Dredd thing.
Yeah, absolutely. How fitting.
It was called Birds of the World, and I'm not an ornithologist, and I've got very little interest in ornithology, but I enjoyed working for Birds of the World. And then there was we followed that with the short-lived Fish of the World. Fish just aren't as interesting as birds, you know. They're not as nice to look at, and you can't have a fish sitting on your hand or your wrist feeding it titbits.
I just love the idea that you know, Judge Dredd's world and Judge Anderson sat on this foundation of romantic fiction and birds and fish.
Yeah, well, you do what you have to earn all of
it. It's true.
I ended up on a working editorially on a magazine called Loving, which was actually quite a popular magazine of its time. I think, if I remember, it was weekly.
Right.
And because it was weekly, we were under tremendous pressure to find enough text stories each week to fill it up. And it was my job to rewrite some of the, how shall I put it, some of the banal scripts that we received. It was my job to rewrite them and pep them up a bit. And basically that was where I learned how to write, you know, writing and rewriting other people's material.
Because you don't really get apprenticeships like that in print anymore, do you? You don't have the opportunity to learn your craft before you're thrown into it.
No. think you learn at university now and then you walk straight into a job. But,
at least in theory.
Yeah, at least in theory, yeah. Well, because I've worked for myself, I've been a self-employed freelance for 35 years now. Mm. I've forgotten what it was like to work in an office. And funnily enough, or coincidentally enough, and my wife, who's also been a freelance designer for something like 25 years, she applied for some design work with a large local company, and found out that if she got the job, she would have to go back to work in an office. And right. She was saying to me yesterday, I don't think I could do it. I just don't think that I could sit down with other people and do things, because for 30 years, I've been sitting down and doing them myself.
Yeah.
And I feel exactly the same way. I was never able to handle office politics.
Mm.
In any of the jobs that I had before I got into writing. Writing was the perfect job for me because it meant I was on my own and other people would leave me alone to just get on with it. You didn't always have somebody standing over you telling you what to do, you know. It was up to you what to do, and that, I really enjoyed that.
Bringing you back to Anderson, when you went solo on the strip, did you have some kind of plan of where you wanted to go? Even if it was just like a vague idea of, I want to take the strip in this direction, or was it something that just evolved as you did it?
No, I didn't have any fixed plans beforehand. It did just evolve as I did it. The more Anderson stories I wrote, the more they seemed to take on a life of their own. You know, I was just the chronicler of the stories rather than the guy who was making them up.
One thing I find fascinating about Shambhala is the sense of world building that you do. Because obviously, over the years, you and John had fleshed out Dredd's world in many different and varied ways. But then in Shambhala, we have, for the first time, an actual map that shows all these places, and that, you know, a lot of our readers have become quite into this whole idea of mapping out the world, and not just in the map, but there are also lots of little references, things like the Southern Sink, things like I think Brasilia's mentioned in there and whatnot, and it just seems that in a very few pages you managed to expand Dredd's world exponentially, far more than it had been over the preceding years. I mean, was that just something you thought, this will be a nice bit of scene setting, or did you want to make this truly a global event?
Well, I did want to make it a global event, and I remember Arthur calling me up when I sent him the script that I actually had that map in it, and saying, well, what did I put on the map? And I said, well, there are things that have got to go on it, and mentioned two or three things. And I said, but the rest of it, you know, you can just invent, just make it up.
Yeah.
Probably nobody will ever bother about it again. It's just for this story.
How wrong you were.
Well, it's good to be wrong in that way.
Absolutely. We've talked about how Anderson has explored a lot of very thoughtful, very spiritual ideas. As she has evolved as a character, and is along with Dredd, they're unique in that they are characters that change and alter over time. How important has it been to you to be able to guide that character as she has evolved and changed and matured?
No, very, very important. I don't think I could have done it if I'd been forced to stick to the original idea of Judge Anderson, because for me, although I'm quite interested in the supernatural, it's something that I shy away from. I don't practice any kind of magic. You know, you probably heard that Alan Moore, for instance, practices white magic.
Mm.
But I don't do anything like that. I had a couple of experiences that put me off that when I was younger, before I first started writing.
All right.
And although I believe in quite a lot, or No, that's the wrong way of putting it. Although I don't believe in quite a lot of the supernatural, I do try to keep an open mind because of these experiences that I had. Mm. I won't go into what they were, but I was, you know, just to give you a for instance, after my grandmother died, about a couple of weeks later, I wakened up one night. I was about 9 years old, 10 years old, and I wakened up to feel that there was another presence in my bedroom. And when I sat up in bed and looked around in surprise, I could see the dim figure of my grandmother standing at the foot of my bed, which, although it shouldn't have, it totally freaked me out, you know. My parents came running downstairs because I was screaming my head off. I was so frightened. And that has coloured, that and incidents like that have coloured my attitude towards the supernatural. I wouldn't ever urge anyone to get involved with the supernatural, although obviously people do. But after what happened to me, I couldn't. I didn't want to find out more about that sort of thing. I thought, well, it'd be better to explore it through the medium of fictitious characters rather than do it myself.
Well, I mean, that's absolutely fascinating. I think it kind of reinforces that feel, particularly with things like Shambhala, of, as we've talked about, this almost Fortean attitude towards these things, which is, you know, there are more things in heaven and earth than contained in your philosophy.
Yeah.
But let's keep an open mind, but let's not, you know, go around dabbling and provoking.
Yeah, keep an open mind. That's been my watchword. Since I started out, I try not to blot out anything at all as being, oh, well, you know, that's highly unlikely or, oh, that's impossible. I try to keep an open mind about it. And as I said earlier, if something interests me, I figure that that will interest my readers as well. And that's why I use things like that in stories.
Okay. Now, Shambhala was published in 1990 in 2000 AD, and then there was a bit of a gap before the Jesus Syndrome and Satan appeared 3 and 5 years later. I don't know whether you remember what the reason was for switching titles, but did you find it easier once you didn't have that weekly schedule and when you had a little bit more space to tell the story?
Yeah, it allowed me to open up a bit more. I think that was whoever was the editor at the time, and I can't remember who the editor was, but it was the editor's decision to put Anderson into the magazine and out of 2000 AD. But, I mean, it suited me well, and it suited the character as well.
So it just seems you had more space to breathe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you weren't... you weren't under the deadline cosh all the time. Although, to be truthful about it, I like being under the deadline cosh. That's what makes me work, you know. It gives me great motivation to think, oh, well, the story's due on Friday, I'd better get started. Maybe I shouldn't admit to things like that.
Now, one of the reasons why we've done the Judge Dredd mega collection part works with Hachette is to basically try and introduce people to the best of Dredd and Dredd's world. If you were talking to somebody who'd never read any Judge Anderson, was maybe, you know, a bit familiar with Judge Dredd, what would you say Shambhala represents within Judge Anderson's life and within the Dredd universe?
In Anderson's life, it was a story where she fell in love for the first time and had her true love so cruelly ripped away from her. That's probably down to the fact that I prefer stories with tragic endings rather than stories with happy endings. I probably sought out stories that were going to end unhappily for somebody.
I just wonder if somebody hadn't read Shambhala, what would you say to them? The meaning of the story was.
that's a good question. The meaning of the story. Yeah, be nice to your neighbours. like I said, with Buddha and with Jesus, their philosophies come back firmly to rest on love.
Mm.
Love, an all-encompassing love for mankind. And I think very few of us, very, very few people alive, have that sort of feeling. Today's world might seem spiritual in a sense, but then when you look at what, for instance, Islamic State are doing, I'm sure that Allah never told them to saw people's heads off and then put it on the internet. You know, it just doesn't make sense to me. It's mankind meddling in stuff that they really shouldn't meddle in.
Mm.
I don't know what the answer to it is. I think that mankind will always do that. So there will always be stories to be told. But perhaps I should say it's a good thing, because it means there will always be material for me to work on.
Yeah, that's probably the best.
Well, this has got nothing at all to do with Judge Anderson, but I do a story called Tales of the Buddha Before He Was Enlightened with the artist John Howard, who has actually worked on Judge Dredd as well. But I'm afraid that if the Buddhists in Thailand or Burma ever get to see it, I'll be getting people with bombs strapped to their bodies coming to my door, you know. So sometimes late at night I worry about it. Not because of any disrespect I feel towards Buddha, you know. I feel the greatest respect for anybody who can turn around and say to man, or to mankind, look, this is the way you should be, this is the way you could be, why are you doing things the way you are, you know? And like I said, I actually do have a story where I would like to tie it all together, but I've just not found the right way of doing it yet. I've had it marked down in my ideas book for a good 15 or 20 years now.
Mm.
And every now and again I come back to it and think, yeah, I've got to tell that story, but how do I do it? How do I do it and make it interesting to comic readers?
Mm.
So one day I'll get it done. I'm not going to go into it anymore at this point, but one day I will get it done.
Well, I hope you do.
Hopefully through a Judge Anderson story.
Yeah. Well, I hope you do, because that sounds absolutely fascinating, and it would be a privilege to read it. Well, I just want to say thank you very much indeed to Alan for joining us on the 2000 AD Thrillcast. It's been absolutely fantastic. Thanks very much indeed.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks again to Alan for joining us on the 2000 AD Thrillcast. It's absolutely fantastic to talk to him, one of the greatest writers that 2000 AD has ever published, on one of the greatest stories that we've ever featured amongst our pages. If you're able to, please do pick up Shambhala in the Judge Dredd the Mega Collection, which is available from all newsagents in the UK and Ireland. As I said, if you can't get hold of it that way, then it is available in the Judge Anderson the Sci-Files, which is available in print and digital through 2000 AD and our apps. So thanks very much to Alan for joining us on the 2000 AD Thrillcast, and a special thanks to all of you for listening. The support for the Thrillcast has been absolutely fantastic. So we are going to continue. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes. If you do, then please leave us a little starred review to let us know that you're enjoying what we're doing. If you want more from 2000 AD, make sure you sign up to the 2000 AD Thrill Mail, which if you go to www.2000adonline.com/thrillmail, you'll get a weekly thrillgasm into your inbox every Wednesday, which has loads of stuff like digital deals and the latest announcements and free comics and things like that. If you want to follow us on social media, then we are at 2000AD on Twitter and facebook.com/2000AD. We're also on Google Plus and Instagram as Insta2000AD. So once again, thank you so much for joining us on the 2000AD Thrillcast. It really is a pleasure to be able to bring these classic stories to you every fortnight. So please make sure you join us in a fortnight's time, where we're going to be talking about another Stone Cold classic, which is Mandroid by John Wagner and Kev Walker. So that's all from the 2000 AD Thrillcast this week. Earthlitz, Splundig Verthrig.